day. So we're starting a new series this week. So we've been looking over the summer about the book of Daniel. That's come to an end after he was rescued from the lion's den. So we're now going to be looking at a new series on discipleship. And this is on the same sort of theme, but it's from a different set of things as the house groups are going to be studying this week. So we're going to be studying the Discipleship Explored course as part of the house groups. And we're going to be looking at a different set of passages, but related on the theme of discipleship on Sunday mornings. So do pick up a leaflet from out the foyer if you want the list of topics that we're going to work on. And I've been given the command of discipleship today from the passage that we read. As we said, there's a number of people away, so for the benefit of those who are listening online, I'll say welcome to you as well, and hope you can find something from this too. And anyone, if you've got any questions on anything I say, or you disagree with anything, or you wholeheartedly want to agree, whether later on or today, do feel coming free to talk to me about that. So I thought I'd start out, as I would in sort of a business sense, of trying to start out with what I want to achieve from today. And then at the end, I can come back and we can see, have I actually met those aims? Now, as you'll find, usually when I give things like this, I'll ask more questions than I answer. So you can come and tell me the answers later. That'll be great. So the first thing I want to sort of work through is, if we're talking about discipleship for the next 10 weeks or something, what is a disciple? If we don't go away knowing what that is today, then I've rather failed, because it's going to make it a little bit difficult for the rest of the time that we have this series. Secondly, I want us to ask ourselves the question, based on what is a disciple, of Jesus, and am I one of them? I don't want us to automatically assume yes we are until we've perhaps dug into that. It's a dangerous thing to do, to start assuming things about ourselves. So we'll ask ourselves the questions, are we disciples of Jesus? And then thirdly, based upon this passage, I'm going to be asking the question of am I a discipler? Am I a discipler? So those are the three things that we'd have in your minds, those questions that hopefully will be answered a little bit, at least during the course of my session. Now, I think one of the things of human nature that we have is that we are copycats. We are copycats. Imitation is human nature. And it begins right from the time that we come out of the womb and begin to grow up, and it's particularly prevalent in young people. So I'll give you some examples of how Daniel is a copycat. These are things I've noticed this week. So one of the things we have is our garage door is a little bit stiff. So you bang it down, and one of the corners still doesn't quite catch properly. So I'll go along, and I'll give it a kick, usually, to save my back from having to bend down. And I've noticed that Daniel now, whenever he comes out with me to the garage, when he's finished, he'll always come up and give it a little kick. Okay, that's one of the things he did. So another thing was, he was just chatting with Liz while I was getting on with some work, when I was working at home. And I don't know quite what his conversation was, but it seemed to be a bit random to me. So I just, as I was walking through, I just mentioned another thing randomly as part of the conversation. And as I left the room, Daniel announced, "Daddy's a numpty, isn't he?" to Liz. The numpty word coming from my vocabulary, meaning someone a bit stupid for those unaware. And then we were also going out to the Friday Night Live group with Joshua and Abigail and Daniel, and the children like to sort of shout goodbye to Liz when the door shuts so she couldn't possibly hear anyway, but they do it anyway, and because they're learning German at home, they decided to shout out, "Auf Wiedersehen!" To which point Daniel also gives his best attempt at going, "Auf Wiedersehen!" in his own cute Daniel sort of way. Because he's a copycat, because that's how we learn. That's how we learn to talk. If we don't get talked at as a baby, we don't tend to speak, because we haven't got the knowledge of what to say. Imitation is human nature. Secondly, this is a way of introduction. A piece of the Chariots of Film Fire came to me while we were in the middle of the prayer meeting the other day, as it does. And it goes like this. I don't know if you've seen the film Chariots of Fire. It's been around a few years before me, so hopefully you have done. So there's two main characters in the film. You've got Eric Little, who's the Scottish Christian runner, and you've got Harold Abrahams, who is the Jewish sprinter. And it's the story of how they aim for Olympic gold medals at the 1924 Paris Olympics. And I won't spoil what happens with that. But Harold Abrahams has such a drive to get that gold medal. He's prepared to take extraordinary steps to do so. So one of the things he does is he approaches a professional coach, which was extremely frowned upon in those times because athletics was seen as an amateur sport. So he approaches this man, Sam Mussolini, who's known to be a good coach in the sporting world at this point. So he says this, if I can read my own writing. So Sam, the coach, says this. He says, "So you travelled 300 miles to see me?" And Harold says, "You and Little. I heard you were both the best." And Sam says, "What do you think now? I've never seen such drive, such devotion in a runner," referring to Little. "He runs like a wild animal. He unnerves me." As well he should. He frightens the living daylights out of me. He used to run like this with his head up to heaven. Harold says, "Yes, well, I want you to help me take him on." And Sam pauses for a minute and says, "Tell me, Mr. Abrahams, are you married?" "No." "Why?" "Well, when the right girl comes along, how would you feel if she pops the question?" "You see, Mr. Abrahams, like the bridegroom, it's the coach that should do the asking." And they sort of go on to talk about this. And then Sam says, "Okay, well, I'll come and watch you. And if I think you're good enough, when we meet again, I'll give you my answer. I'll take you on." So we're looking at a passage today about disciples. And I wanted to give a bit of background from the Jewish world, from the research that I've done. So at the time of Jesus, you would have the teachers, generally the teachers of the law, and they would be known as rabbis, and they still are in the Jewish world today. And then the people that came along that were studying under the rabbi, the students, they would be called the disciples. So that's the context with which we find ourselves. And in terms of this Chariots of Fire sketch, which you can go on YouTube if you want to, you see, Sam, in terms of the New Testament times, isn't right. Because for the rabbis, it was expected that the disciples would come to the rabbi. And they would present themselves to the rabbi, and they would say, "May I follow you? May I follow you?" It was the disciple that would do the asking. In effect, he would be saying, "Do I have what it takes to be like you?" So the rabbi was somebody who was set up that people respected so much that people would want to be like them. The disciple would attach themselves to the rabbi. They would follow the rabbi everywhere. And they would often not know where the rabbi was going, and they wouldn't ask, because that wasn't important. Because for the mind of the disciple, what they were to do was to get to a place where they would think like and act like the rabbi in every situation. So the disciple coming to the rabbi and saying, "May I follow you?" was to say, "I want to be like you. Teach me to be like you, because I want to be just like you." And so the rabbi would then have to make the decision of, what do I think of the disciple? What do I think of you? Because if they didn't think that the disciple was up to the job, they would say no. And at that point, the disciple, the wannabe disciple, would then go and start a trade instead. They weren't up to the job. And that's the world with which we find ourselves. The disciples want to be just like the rabbi. And the rabbi would have to be extremely careful in choosing who their disciples would be, because there will be no point in training somebody who is not up to the task. However, Jesus turned this on its head. Because if you remember, at the start of the Gospel stories, we read how Jesus goes off and he prays, and he then goes and he chooses his disciples. He does not wait for them to come to him. He chooses them. And in this way, we see that Jesus is saying to people, you may be sinful people, but you can be my disciples. This is not beyond you. Jesus trusts us as people that this is possible, what he wants discipleship to be. This is something which is not beyond ordinary people. So this is the world with which we find ourselves. It's an imitation world. It's a copycat world. I can see Daniel turning out like me, and that's good. And as a rabbi, the disciple wants to be just like the rabbi. And the biggest success for a rabbi is for someone to look at the disciple and say, they're just like you. They act just like you. So that when the rabbi is gone, the disciple is still there, following on in the footsteps of the rabbi. Now, we don't normally use the term disciple in our language very much. The only time really that I talk about disciples is when I'm in Christian settings and I talk about the 12 disciples or that kind of thing. So I was hoping, as a result of the talk today, to give some pictures that we can take in our heads of when we say the word disciple, what should spring to mind, making it a little bit less abstract and a bit more concrete to examples we have in our lives today. And maybe one of them will spring out more to you than others, and that's fine. It's just to give us some perhaps more practical examples of what a disciple is, to help us understand this imitation world of a disciple. So this is the first one on the screen, learner, that I've got. So the word disciple that we get, that's translated from the Greek mathetes, I think it is, literally means a learner. A learner. And so immediately, you know, I begin to think of learner drivers, for example, or someone who's come to start a task that's going to take a while to learn. The sorts of words that spring out to me from that is humility. To be a disciple, to be a learner, requires humility. Because immediately you're saying, that by saying, some coming to the rabbi and saying, teach me, I want to follow you, is there's stuff I don't know. There's stuff I cannot do. And so it requires a great sense of humility. You cannot come to Jesus and say, I know it all. I've got it sussed. It's going to require change. If you're scared of change, you don't come to Jesus and say, I want to be your disciple. Because it's inevitably going to require change. When we come to someone who's perfect and holy, and someone like us comes, it's going to require us to be different. It's going to require growth. This is a long journey, because we're never going to get there. When I get in the car, which is very infrequent, I know there's more stuff I can do better. I once went on a skid pan course that my dad bought for me. You ever been on a skid pan course? No? So they take cars, which are a bit clapped out, and they put bald tyres on them, completely bald, so there's no grip on them. They then have a sloping track, and they have water mixed with oil constantly running down the track. Okay? They then put cones round the track, and they say, go drive the car round the track. You turn the wheels, the car doesn't really move because your tyres don't grip. You brake the car and the car doesn't stop. In fact, what usually happens is the wheels lock as you hammer them down, desperately trying to get the car to stop. And I realised at that point, I don't know much about driving. The driving instructor took everyone out in the passenger seat. He started at the top of the slope and he put his foot down hard on the accelerator so the car would fly forwards as fast as it could possibly go. And you are hurtling towards the fence at the bottom. And and you know that the tires are bald, there is oil on the track, and the brakes can't stop the car properly. And you are thinking to yourself, we're going to crash. Except for the fact that at the last moment, he does apply the brakes somehow, and he spins the car around, so you stop within a breath of that fence, and he brings the car under the control. Because he can do things in that car that I can't. I was lucky to get around the track. And it's going to require a journey. We don't stop learning. Discipleship is all about keeping going on that journey. We don't stop. It's lifelong. So one of the things I'd like to think about when you think of the term disciple is to think of something continuous. Someone who's going on. We don't stop being disciples of Jesus. That's my first picture point. The second thing I've got is follower. So if you look through the Gospels, at least your concordance, like I did, to save a bit of time, you'll find that Jesus very rarely uses the word disciple. He uses it far more than he does the word Christian, however, which he doesn't mention. Because Christian to us suggests a point in time statement. I have become a Christian. And we think that's kind of the end of our commitment. But Jesus doesn't really use the word disciple very much, and he doesn't use the word Christian very much. But what he does use is the word follow. And one of the challenges I'd like to put out to you this week is to read through the Gospel of Luke afresh, again, and look out for all the terms for follow or follower in Luke's Gospel. Because that gives us an indication of what Jesus is wanting from his disciples. Because you're going to find challenging statements, things like, whoever would come after me, let him take up his cross, deny himself, and follow me. There's that relationship again. Rabbi, disciple. If you want to be that disciple, you're going to have to be prepared to pay the cost. A follower is all about identification. When we follow someone, we're linking ourselves in some way with them. We're associating with them. We're going to have to make a choice. If you're following someone along a path, you can't be following someone who's going in the other direction. There's only one way you can go. So by saying, I follow Jesus, you're therefore by implication saying, I'm not following such and such. I'm not doing that anymore. Because I'm walking this path. Follower in the Greek means one going in the same way. You can't be following Jesus in his way and then be going off in the other path and still say, I'm a disciple. Because Jesus says, follow me. Not follow me and that. It's not about half-heartedness. It's about going all out, following. Closeness. We're identifying ourselves with the rabbi, and we're trying to be like the rabbi. We're trying to be like Jesus. So the first sort of picture I've got is of learner. Someone who's got in a lifelong journey of learning. Secondly, of a follower. Someone in the path. There's an ancient Hebrew document known as the Mishnah, which talks about rabbis. It says of disciples, you should become dusty in the dust of your rabbi's feet. We're to be so close to Jesus that as he's walking along, the dust is going to gather on us. The disciples with their rabbis would go exactly where they went. You know, there are examples of people wanting to go into the toilet with the rabbi because that's an area of life to get to know them, to become just like them. Are we like that? Thirdly, apprentice. One of the implications in the Greek of a learner is not one who learns for knowledge's sake, that you just learn something from a book, I know that now, but it's application of what you know. It's knowing and doing is the assumption. And so I thought of apprentices, that you're doing the on-the-job training. You're not studying from a book, but you're doing it alongside your tutor. Now, I've not been an apprentice, I don't know quite what that's like, but I suspect it's probably quite opportunistic. Something happens, and this becomes the moment to learn. Something bad happens that doesn't happen very often, and at that point, a good tutor can come in and say, yeah, this is how you deal with that situation. And if you don't do it on the job, you don't know how to do that properly. And so the rabbi and the discipleship in our sort of terms, in our culture, is much more akin to an apprentice type job. And so for us as disciples of Jesus, our whole lives are to be moments that God can use to make us more like himself. There is no time of our day when we can say, yeah, I can switch off now. God can't teach me at this point. Because moments are going to come all through our week where Jesus is wanting to use them to teach us how we are to be more like him. You know, the children scribble on the walls. That's a moment. What do I do? How do I behave? You know, this week we had the thing of Abigail's, my daughter's operation being cancelled the day before. And I remember Liz saying to me on the phone, hopefully she won't mind me saying this, that her reaction to this, the irritation she felt with the hospital and the way that we've been dealt with, she wanted to go and sort of start telling people, oh, listen how the hospital treated us. Starting to you know, defame their name, whatever. Until she perhaps thought to herself, is that behaving in the way that Jesus would have taught? It became an opportunity for growth. Every moment is a moment for learning. We have learner, we have follower, we have apprentice. Fan. It never quite occurred to me before that the word fan comes from fanatic. Maybe it's just me that misses that point. If you think of a fan, it might be that you're thinking of a pop fan. It might be thinking of a sports fan or something else. The sorts of things I think of at this point is the devotion, the passion. You start them off on that topic and you can't get them to stop talking, no matter how bored you've become. Are we like that? Do we have the same passion that the disciples of their rabbis had in those times? You can't keep a devoted fan quiet about their subject, about what their passion is about. Yet how often do we open our mouths about our rabbi and about the things we're learning? Do we have that boldness? Finally, student. Part of the implication of disciple is a student. And yes, although it's an apprentice-type job, I think more perhaps of a medical student. Studying the books, because until they've studied the books, they can't apply that knowledge in the operations. They've learned that. They've applied that. I had the experience when I went with Abigail to the hospital last time. They let me look down the microscope thing to look in the ears. And they looked in there and said, oh, at 1 o'clock is the such and such, and 8 o'clock is the such and such. And I think, what am I talking about? But they've learnt that. They can recognise that. It's the same with our midwife. She comes in and she feels the tummy of Liz and says, yep, that's the elbow, and that's the foot, and that's the... I'm thinking, isn't it her ribs? You know. But they've learnt their stuff. It's hard work. And although it's an on-the-job training, there is going to be study involved because we don't have Jesus here, but we have his word. And we're going to need to read it. We're going to need to learn it because that's where our information comes from, as well as that side-by-side knowledge with other Christians. Once again, I say, can you read Luke this week? Can you see those teachings of Jesus and begin to apply them to your life? Now, I don't know how many of you have seen the Karate Kid film. One. Excellent. We can go to sleep for a few minutes then, yeah? Okay. I did suspect that might be the case, okay? So I'm not going to show you some horrible scenes of violence right now, okay? Quite far from it. However, this has a good thing to it highlights perhaps some of the areas that we've been sort of thinking about this morning. So the guy on the screen there's two people. The boy there, his name is Daniel, and behind him is a Japanese... karate expert called Mr. Miyagi. So Daniel, in school, he's a bit of a wimp, okay? And he's moved into a new area, and he gets involved with the wrong crowd, and he discovers that they're karate experts, and basically they do him in every time they see him. And so at this point he discovers that his caretaker of his flat apartments happens to be a Japanese karate master. And so he says to Mr. Miyagi, will you teach me? I want to be able to fight back. Will you teach me? And so Mr. Miyagi says, okay, you come along tomorrow morning and I'll teach you. And this is what he's going to show. You know, the lights off and the sound up. Okay, come on then, technology, you can do it. Karate. In fact, it looked like he was being the slave of Mr. Miyagi, washing all his cars for him and giving him a wax down. But as you find out later in the film, this is his first part of his training for karate moves, where you block with your arms. He didn't understand how the training was going to come. Just like in our own lives, when things happen to us, we don't understand, what's this got to do with my training? Just as Daniel didn't. And it only becomes clear later. Being a disciple is about opportunities, taking them. It's no place for half-heartedness or like grape. We come and we give Jesus everything, or we're not the disciple. Because that's not what a disciple is. Daniel was now a follower of this man. He identified himself with this man. When he went to the karate clubs, he went with this man, not with anyone else. That can help you just think about some of the issues we've been talking about. So let's come to our Bible passage. So hopefully you've perhaps got a few mental pictures in your mind of what does it mean to be a disciple. And then Jesus wants to be clear to his disciples, as he leaves the earth to go back to heaven, what now? What's he going to hold now? Now Jesus has gone back to heaven, people can't literally, physically be his disciples anymore. So what's going to come? What was Jesus' intention for discipleship now? So we read in verse 18 the incredible statement, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Can anyone match that for someone to follow? Can anyone else claim that all authority in heaven and on earth belongs to them? When we are half-hearted about our discipleship, what else, you know, what do we think is worth it other than following the one who has all authority forevermore? This is something to get excited about. This is someone worth following. The disciples had just been through the sad event of Jesus dying on a cross, not understanding why, only to find that on the third day, their rabbi had risen again. That he claimed that through that death, he'd taken the punishment that we deserved, that we could have that relationship with God again. That God loves us. That much? That's how much we're worth? And he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Follow me. And then the thing that follows. Go, therefore. Go, therefore. The assumption is, if we get that message, we've got to take some action. It's not all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me and I've given you so many blessings, so enjoy it before you die. It's this message is an exciting message. All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Go and tell people. It's requiring action. Go, therefore. And I don't think it's necessarily suggesting that it's all about movement physically and going off necessarily to the ends of the earth. But that might be part of the deal. But it's a reminder to us that we've heard this message, and if we're following Jesus, if we believe this message, now go, do something. What is it that we're going to do? We've got to decide some action is required. It might be go, meaning movement of our mouths. It might be movement of our hands, our feet, but it requires some action. We know that being a disciple is all about that apprenticeship, that learning on the job. We've got to be doing something to get those opportunities. Go, therefore, and make disciples. And this is one of the key bits for us in terms of what our purpose is on earth. He says to his disciples, go and make more. But we know that a disciple is a personal relationship with the rabbi. Jesus doesn't say to the disciples, go and make a congregation. Go and form a crowd of interested people. He says, go and make disciples. Go and make individuals. Draw them in. Bring them into that place where they are following. Does that mean they are Christians? Perhaps on that path, on that journey. But God is the one that does that work. He's the one that changes people's hearts and lives. But we are to go and make disciples, to go and call people to follow, to go and be attractive lives that people say, I want what you've got. I want that relationship with God. We become the teachers. We are about self-replication. We are to be on that path and bringing others along with us. We are the teachers, and we are making disciples. Are you making disciples? Am I making disciples? I'm not sure how many I am. Not personal people. I'm talking in front of a congregation here. But this isn't making disciples. Because I'm not speaking personally to any single one of you. Maybe I'm teaching, but I'm certainly not making disciples right now. And he said, make disciples of all nations. No one is excluded from this. There's no person that you can meet and you can say, well, they don't really qualify to be a disciple. I can't make them a disciple. Jesus doesn't include those in his call. All nations. And it might be that we have to go to those nations. That's what might be what God wants. And he says, part of the deal, in verse 19, is baptize them. If we call ourselves a follower of Jesus Christ, are we baptized? Because if we haven't, we're not following this example that he's saying. He's saying, be baptized. Because we identify ourselves with our baptism with Jesus. That's our clear-cut point where people can see and say, yeah, he has associated himself with Jesus. And we associate ourselves with all those other people that have been baptized. We come into a community of other believers in Jesus. Have you been baptized? Because this is all what it means to be Jesus' disciple. And then one of the key bits. What does he want us to say to these disciples? Teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. Jesus is looking for obedient followers. There is no other way. Now, I read a quote that goes like this. At the most basic level, the Bible says that Jesus doesn't have two classes of disciples. Those who abandon their lives to his service and those who don't. Jesus doesn't have two sorts of disciples. Those that decide they want to obey and are going to do their very best to do that, or those that think, well, I'll take it and leave it as it comes. If your life isn't fully pointing in Jesus' way, with utter holiness, then we've got something to learn and we've got something to do about it. We are called to be set apart, different. People should be able to look at us and say, wow, they are different. Why are they different? What are they all about? If people can't spot us being radically different, then we've got some changing to do. We've got some discipleship to do. We've got a Jesus to follow more closely. We've got a Bible to read. Love your enemies and pray for those that persecute you. That's one of the things. Do not worry. Do not be afraid. Are we obeying those things? Because those are the commandments too that Jesus has given. As we start to go through our discipleship course, we're going to have to start looking at obedience. Am I obeying Jesus fully? Are there any of my areas of my life where I know I'm not fully obeying him, that I've kept for myself, that I don't want Jesus to touch just yet? Because if we're truly following, if we're saying we're disciples, we're saying, Jesus, you can have all of that. You can begin to take that apart piece by piece and remold me until we reach the aim of our discipleship, that people can look at us and say, we are like Jesus. We think like Jesus. We act like Jesus. We are like Jesus to the people around us. We want to be all about imitation. We want to be growing closer to Jesus and being like him. Can you say of today, I've got up and I want to be more like Jesus? When I get up tomorrow, I want to be more like Jesus. I don't care what the circumstances might be. I want to be more like Jesus. When it comes to Tuesday, I still want to be more like Jesus. I won't be getting jaded from work or other things that might pull me away from that. I'll still be waking up on Wednesday thinking, I want to be more like Jesus today. On Thursday, I want to be more like Jesus. So when we come back next Sunday, we are more like Jesus. And here's the conclusion. I am with you always. I'm not sure it's clear as to whether Jesus is saying, if you're going and making disciples and baptizing them and teaching them, I will be with you, or just ignore that bit and I am with you. We often take it to be that. But I think Jesus is especially wanting us to think, if we're going and doing that and taking those radical steps and taking apart our lives to make them more like him and living our lives for him, he will be with us, we can guarantee that. We have the power to live for him. We can move in his power. We can live in his love, move in his light, as we sung at the start. We can know his power today, his presence today, his relationship today. So I just wanted to lay down a few challenges. I've already given down my Luke challenge. Will you read Luke's gospel this week and look for follow? Look at the things he commands and saying, am I following that to the letter? So here's my three challenges. Do you think your friends or family would describe you as a disciple of Jesus? Maybe you don't want to be. Maybe you wouldn't claim to be. Is that what you do want? I wonder how you'd answer that. If you do want to be a disciple of Jesus, how's that going to change this week? Do you want them to describe you as that if they don't already? Would you say that you are discipling someone personally at the moment? Is there someone you could say, yep, I am their teacher and they are following me, that I can bring them to be more like Jesus? Are you making disciples like these disciples were asked to here? And if you're not, if you want to be, what's stopping you? What needs to change? How can the church as a whole help in that? That we can be going to make more disciples? Thirdly, what areas of your life can you identify as not being in line with what Jesus has commanded? Do you know there's areas of your life that are not holy, that are not pleasing, that are not as a disciple of Jesus should be? That you know there's a conflict between calling yourself a disciple of Jesus and living the way you're living? If there is, are you going to rectify that? Are you going to take radical steps to deal with that? Are you going to do anything about that today? So those are the three things I wanted to leave with you. And rather than singing a song to conclude, I just wanted to play one over the sound system, just to listen to. And just perhaps to think about these questions. Think about what I've said. And you may not agree with all of it. And as I said, feel free to come and talk to me about it afterwards. Let's get some debate going as we go through these discipleship courses. But perhaps this gives us a few minutes to mull over these things. Decide, do I want to change? Do I want to come and pray with someone today and ask God to help us to change? Let's just sit and listen to it together.
I'm moving with the Lamb I'm surrounded. strong with the King of Kings. And I'm stepping with the Lamb, stepping over my sin. Well, I'm moving with the Lamb, I'm moving with the Lamb, I'm surrounded. I'm moving with the Lamb, I'm I'm stepping with the Lamb.